Good morning, everyone. You're listening to the World Teacher Program for Share International New Zealand on Planet FM 104.6. Each Friday morning, we bring you information from the teachers of the Ageless Wisdom. The purpose of our program is to introduce Maitreya, the world teacher for the Age of Aquarius. Maitreya does not come alone. He brings with him the Masters of Wisdom, a group of highly evolved teachers. They work in many fields and can teach us the art of living, how to live in right relationship with each other. With their inspiration, we can transform our civilization, creating justice and peace for us all.
Good morning and welcome to the program. Today's theme is the environment, and I'll be reading out a couple of articles from the June issue of Share International magazine on that theme. I'm going to start, though, with an article by Benjamin Krem's master titled Saving the Planet. When mankind realizes how serious is the ecological imbalance of their planetary home, they must take the steps so urgently needed to remedy the situation. If men were to fail to respond with sufficient resolution, they would be guilty of surrendering the planet to slow but inevitable destruction. What, then, the legacy to hand on to their children? That this self-destruction should not prevail, all must act together and make the necessary sacrifices. This will entail a complete change in attitude to the integrity of the planet and what are seen as the needs of men today. It will not be easy for some to countenance the changes needed, but only by such change can the life of the planet be assured. Already, deep inroads have been made into the essential stock of trees on Earth. Deforestation has caused a growing loss of oxygen and the rise of carbon gases. This is now at a critical stage and requires immediate action. The reality of global warming is now dawning on the minds of millions, yet, despite the overwhelming evidence, some still deny the actions of men are the cause. We, your elder brothers, can say with full conviction that the actions of men are responsible for 80% of global warming. Maitreya, you will find, will not be long in bringing this urgent problem to man's attention. He will face men with the alternatives. The beneficial results of action now, on the one hand, and the destruction which would ensue from doing nothing or too little, on the other. Thus, the decision is man's alone. When men understand this, they will indeed rally to the cause. They will see that the future for their children depends on action now, and will elicit from Maitreya and his group the necessary steps to take. Maitreya will advocate a simpler form of living, one more in keeping with the reality of the planet's situation. When enough people are convinced that this is necessary, there will be a growing movement to simplify throughout the planet. This will proceed with quite unusual speed, so inspired by the need for change will millions be. Thus will the gravest dangers facing planet Earth be somewhat countered. This will encourage many and boost their readiness for further changes. Faced with the dilemma of necessary change, men will come to realize the inevitability of accepting the principle of sharing. Only sharing will make these changes practical and possible. Only through sharing can the bounty of planet Earth be successfully used. Only through sharing can this bounty be correctly husbanded. Only thus can the planet itself live in harmony with its environment and with its inhabitants. That was originally published in the May 2007 issue of the magazine. Now, on to two articles from the June issue. The first one is titled Pope Francis and the Sun, S-U-N, and subtitled Perhaps the World's Greatest Environmental Champion is Dead. It's by Bill McGibbon. Just in case I thought one couldn't feel more forlorn right now, the word came this morning of the death of Pope Francis. This is written, by the way, 21st April 2025. It hit me hard, not because I'm a Catholic, I'm a Methodist, but because I'd always felt buoyed by his remarkable spirit. If he could bring new hope and energy to an institution as hidebound as the Vatican, there was reason for all of us to go on working on our own hidebound institutions. And if he could stand so completely in solidarity with the world's poor and vulnerable, then it gave the rest of us something to aim for. I thought this from the start, when he became the first pope to choose the name of Francis, that counter-cultural blaze of possibility in a dark time. And when he showed his mastery of the art of gesture, washing the feet of women, of prisoners, of Muslim refugees. Only Greta Thunberg, with her school strike, has so mastered the power of gesture in modern politics. But he brought that moral resolve to the question of climate change, making it the subject of his 2015 encyclical Laudato Si, the most important document of his papacy and arguably the most important piece of writing so far this millennium. I spent several weeks living with that book-length epistle in order to write about it for the New York Review of Books. And though I briefly met the man himself in Rome, it is that encounter with his mind that really lives with me. Laudato Si is a truly remarkable document. Yes, it exists as a response to the climate crisis, and it was absolutely crucial in the lead-up to the Paris climate talks, consolidating elite opinion behind the idea that some kind of deal was required. But it uses the climate crisis to talk in broad and powerful terms about modernity. The ecological problems we face are not, in their origin, technological, says Francis. Instead, quote, a certain way of understanding human life and activity has gone awry, to the serious detriment of the world around us, unquote. He is no Luddite who can deny the beauty of an aircraft or a skyscraper, as Pope Francis said. But he insists that we have succumbed to a technocratic paradigm, which leads us to believe that, quote, every increase in power means an increase of progress itself, unquote, as if reality, goodness, and truth automatically flow from technological and economic power as such. This paradigm, quote, exalts the concept of a subject who, using logical and rational procedures, progressively approaches and gains control over an external object, unquote. Men and women, he writes, have from the start, another quote, intervened in nature, but for a long time this meant being in tune with and respecting the possibilities offered by the things themselves. It was a matter of receiving what nature itself allowed, as if from its own hand. In our world, however, human beings and material objects no longer extend a friendly hand to one another. The relationship has become confrontational. With the great power that technology has afforded us, it's become easy to accept the idea of infinite or unlimited growth, which proves so attractive to economists, financiers, and experts in technology. It is based on the lie that there is an infinite supply of the Earth's goods, and this leads to the planet being squeezed dry beyond every limit. The deterioration of the environment, he says, is just one sign of this reductionism which affects every aspect of human and social life. I think Francis's project for the Earth, a recovery of fellow feeling with a special attention to the poor, is the only thing that can save us over time. But it will take time, obviously, for the moment we've chosen the opposite path. In the meantime, Francis was very much a pragmatist and one advised by excellent scientists and engineers. As a result, he had a clear technological preference, the rapid spread of solar power everywhere. He favoured it because it was clean and because it was liberating, the best short-term hope of bringing power to those without it, and leaving that power in their hands, not the hands of some oligarch somewhere. He followed up Laudato Si with a letter last summer, Fratello Sole, which reminds everyone that the climate crisis is powered by fossil fuel, and which goes on to say, there is a need to make a transition to a sustainable development model that reduces greenhouse gas emissions into the atmosphere, setting the goal of climate neutrality. Mankind has the technological means to deal with this environmental transformation and its pernicious ethical, social, economic and political consequences, and among these, solar energy plays a key role. He therefore ordered the Vatican to begin construction of a field of solar panels on land it owned near Rome, an agrivoltaic project that would produce not just food, but enough solar power to entirely power the city-state that is the Vatican. It is designed, in his words, to provide the complete energy sustenance of Vatican City-State. That is to say, this will soon be the first nation powered entirely by the sun. The level of emotion of love in this decision is notable. The Pope named Laudato Si, which means praised be, after the first two words of his namesake's Canticle to the Sun. And Fratello Sole was even more closely tied. Those are the words that the first Francis used to address Brother Sun. I reprint the opening of the canticle here in homage to both men and to their sense of humble communion with the glorious world around us. And here's the quote. All praise be yours, my Lord, through all that you have made. And first, my Lord, Brother Sun, who brings the day and light you give to us through him. How beautiful is he, how radiant in all his splendour. Of you, Most High, he bears the likeness. The world is a poorer place, but far richer for Pope Francis having lived. And that is reprinted from Bill McGibbon's website. Now for a second article, this one is in the Save Our Planet section of the magazine, and it's titled Activating the Silent Majority for Climate Action. We know that many people joining together in a unified effort can create rapid change. But what if the vast majority of the world's people who would ordinarily push for climate action thought they were in the minority? That is precisely the case, according to a new global survey that interviewed 130,000 people in 125 countries. The survey results, published in the journal Nature Climate Change, found that 89% thought their government should do more to fight global warming. However, when asked if they would contribute 1% of their household income every month to fight global warming, and what proportion of their fellow citizens would do the same, there was a large perception gap. In most countries, people believe that only a minority of their fellow citizens would be willing to contribute, while in reality the opposite was true. In all but a few countries, More than 50% of citizens were willing to contribute 1% of their income monthly to fight climate change. The gap between perception and reality was as high as 40 percentage points in some countries, indicating that many people think their climate concerns are a minority view. Professor Cynthia France of Oberlin College in the US says, currently, worrying about climate change is something people are largely doing in the privacy of their own minds. We are locked in a self-fulfilling spiral of silence. And Dr. Neil McLaughlin with the Climate Barometer Research Group in the UK adds, if you were to unlock the perception gaps that could move us closer to a social tipping point amongst the public on climate issues. The existence of a silent climate majority worldwide is supported by several separate analyses, and a key reason their views have been suppressed is the long-term campaign of misinformation by the fossil fuel industry. Fortunately, there's ample evidence that correcting mistaken beliefs about others' opinions can change people's views on any number of topics, including environmental issues. People are instinctively drawn to majority views, and if they think their views are in the majority and that others are doing something, they are more likely to act too. Research has found that politicians suffer from serious misperceptions also. In the US, almost 80% of congressional staffers underestimated people's support for limits on carbon emissions, sometimes more than 50 percentage points. In the UK, members of parliament vastly underestimated public support for onshore wind farms. Especially in the case of politicians, perception gaps can have real-world consequences when policies don't accurately reflect the sentiment of the public. Educating politicians on their misconceptions would therefore be fertile ground for climate change. Professor Theodora Bonnevard at the University of Bonn in Germany was part of the team behind the 125 nation survey and concluded, the world is united in its judgment about climate change and the need to act. Our results suggest a concerted effort to correct these misperceptions could be a powerful intervention yielding large positive effects. That is taken from the Guardian website. We have time for a little excerpt from one of Maitreya's messages to finish off with. This is from message number 58. All that I say tonight pertains to the creation of a new living structure for mankind. A new civilization must be built on the ruins of the old. That which is precious and worth preserving will be so preserved. But all that hinders the manifestation of man's true greatness must be discarded. A time is coming, my friends, when you will see around you cities of beauty, glowing creations of love, and all the manifestation of man's dreams of himself as God. Thus will it be. Many are the ways to perfection, but the simple ways are best. My way, the way of love, will take man quickest to his source. If you can see this, you will proceed on a path unerring and true. And for all men, this is so. When you see me, you will know the time has come to begin this work of change, of building the new, creating forms and structures which will reveal yourselves to each other as the gods you are. My masters will help you in this work, and I shall lead. That's the program, and I hope you enjoyed that information. If you'd like to find out more about Share International and Maitreya, you can check out the website share-international.org. Wishing you all a lovely week.
community connection. Planet Audio.
Eating disorder.